10. Apothecarian. Prayers. Confession. Stripped out of his armour and wearing bloody surgical robes, Vadon was as close to desperate as he had ever been in his long experience as an apothecary of the Sons of Horus. The War Master lay before him on the gurney, his flesh exposed to his knives and to the probes of the Medicaid machines. Oxygen was fed to the War Master through a mask, and saline drips pumped fluids into his body in an attempt to normalize his blood pressure. Medicaid servitors brought fresh blood for immediate transfusions, and the entire theater fizzed with tension and frantic activity. "We're losing him," shouted Apothecary Logan, watching the heart monitors. "Blood pressure is dropping rapidly, heart rate spiking. He's going to arrest." "Damn it," cursed Vadon. "Get me more Laramann serum. His blood won't clot. And fix up another fluid line." A whirring surgical narthesium swung down from the ceiling, multiple limbs clattering as they obeyed Vadon's shouted commands. Fresh Laramann cells were pumped directly into Horus's shoulder, and the bleeding slowed, though Vadon could see it still wasn't stopping completely. Thick needles jabbed into the War Master's arms, filling him with super-oxygenated blood, but their supply was dwindling faster than he would have believed possible.
"Stabilizing," breathed Logan. "Heart rate slowing, and blood pressure is up."
"Good," said Vadon.
"We've got some breathing room, then."
"He can't take much more of this," said Logan. "We're running out of things we can do for him."
"I'll not hear that in my theater, Logan," snapped Vadon. "We're not going to lose him."
The War Master's chest hiked as he clung to life, his breathing coming in short, hyperventilating gasps, more blood pumping from the wound in his shoulder. Of the two wounds the War Master had suffered, it seemed the least severe, but Vadon knew it was the one that was killing him. The puncture wound in his chest had practically healed already. Ultrasonograms showing that his lung had sealed itself off from the pulmonary system while it repaired itself. The War Master's secondary lungs were sustaining him for now. The Mournival hovered like expectant fathers as the apothecaries worked harder than they had ever worked before. Vadon had never expected to have the War Master for a patient. The Primarch's biology was as far beyond that of a normal Astartes warrior as his own was from a mortal man, and Vadon knew that he was out of his depth. Only the Emperor himself had the knowledge to delve into the body of a Primarch with confidence, and the enormity of what was occurring was not lost on him. A green light winked into life on the Narthesium machine, and he lifted the data slate from the port in its silver steel surface. Numbers and text scrolled across its glossy surface, and though much of it made no sense to him, he felt his spirits fall as what he could comprehend sank in. Seeing that the War Master was stable, he circled the operating slab and joined the Mournival, wishing he had better news for them.
"What's wrong with him?" demanded Abaddon. "Why is he still lying there?"
"Honestly, First Captain, I don't know."
"What do you mean you don't know?"
shouted Abaddon, grabbing Vadon and slamming him against the theater wall. Silver trays laden with scalpels, saws, and forceps clattered to the tiled floor.
"Why don't you know?"
Loken and Aximand grappled with the First Captain as Vadon felt Abaddon's enormous strength slowly crushing his neck.
"Let go of him, Ezekiel," cried Loken. "This isn't helping."
"You won't let him die,"
snarled Abaddon, and Vadon was amazed to see a terrible fear in the First Captain's eyes.
"He is the War Master."
"You think I don't know that?"
gasped Vadon, as the others prized Abaddon's grip from his neck. He slid down the wall, already able to feel the swelling in his bruised throat.
"Emperor, damn you if you let him die,"
hissed Abaddon, stalking the theater with predatory strides.
"If he dies, I will kill you."
Aximand led the First Captain away from him, speaking soothing words as Loken and Torgadon helped him to his feet.
"The man's a maniac," hissed Vadon. "Get him out of my theater now."
"He's not himself, Apothecary," explained Loken. "None of us are."
"Just keep him away from my team, Captain," warned Vadon. "He's not in control of himself, and that makes him dangerous."
"We will," Torgadon promised him. "Now what can you tell us? Will he survive?"
Vadon took a moment to compose himself before answering, picking up his fallen data slate.
"As I said before, I just don't know. We're like children trying to repair a logic engine that's been dropped from orbit. We don't understand even a fraction of what his body is capable of or how it works.
I can't even begin to guess what kind of damage it suffered to have caused this.
What's actually happening to him?
Asked Logan.
It's the wound in his shoulder. It won't clot. It's bleeding out and we can't stop it. We found some degraded genetic residue in the wound that might be some kind of poison, but I can't be sure.
Might it be a bacteriological or viral infection?
Asked Torgadden.
The water on Davin's moon was thick with contaminants. I ought to know. I swallowed a flagon's worth of it.
No, said Vadden. The Warmaster's body is, for all intents and purposes, immune to such things.
Then what is it?
This is a guess, but it looks like this particular poison induces a form of anemic hypoxia. Once it enters the bloodstream, it's absorbed exponentially by the red blood cells, in preference to oxygen. With the Warmaster's accelerated metabolism, the toxin was carried efficiently around his system, damaging his tissue cells as it went, so they were unable to make proper use of the reduced oxygen content.
So, where did it come from?
Asked Logan.
I thought you said the Warmaster was immune to such things.
And so he is. But this is like nothing I've ever seen before. It's as though it's been specifically designed to kill him. It's got precisely the right genetic camouflage to fool his enhanced biological defences and allow it to do the maximum amount of damage. It's a Primarch killer. Pure and simple.
So, how do we stop it?
This isn't an enemy you can take a bolter or a sword to, Captain Logan. It's a poison, he said. If I knew the source of the poisoning, we might be able to do something.
Then, if we found the weapon that did this, would that be of some help?
Asked Logan. Seeing the desperate need for hope in the captain's eyes, Vadden nodded.
Maybe. From the wound shape, it looks like a stab wound from a sword. If you can retrieve the blade, then maybe we can do something for him.
I'll find it, swore Logan.
He turned from Vadden and made his way to the theatre door.
You're going back there?
Asked Torgadden, running to catch up with him.
Yes, and don't try to stop me, warned Logan.
Stop you? Said Torgadden. Don't be such a drama queen, Garvey. I'm coming with you.
Recovering a Titan after action in the field was a long and arduous process, full of technical, logistical, and manual difficulties. Entire fleets of vessels came down from orbit, bringing huge lifters, enormous diggers and loading machines. The delivery vessels had to be dug from their impact craters, and an army of Mechanicum servitors were required to facilitate the process. Titus Kassar was exhausted. He'd spent the better part of the day prepping the Titan for its recovery, and everything was in readiness for their return to the fleet. Until they were recovered, there wasn't much to do except wait, and that had become the hardest part of all for the men left behind on Davin's moon. With time to wait, there was time to think, and with time to think, the human mind could conjure all manner of things from the depths of its imagination. Titus still couldn't believe that Horus had fallen. A being of such power, like unto a Titan himself, was not meant to fall in battle. He was invincible. The son of a god. In the shadow of the Dies Irae, Titus fished out his Lectitio Divinitatis chapbook, and, once he was satisfied he was alone, began to read the words there. The badly printed scripture gave him comfort, turning his mind to the glory of the divine emperor of mankind.
O emperor, who is lord, and god above us all, hear me in this hour of need. Your servant lies with death's cold touch upon him, and I ask you to turn your beneficent gaze his way.
He fished out a pendant from beneath his uniform jacket as he read. It was a delicately wrought thing of silver and gold that he'd had one of the blank-faced servitors fashion for him. A silver capital I, with a golden starburst at its centre. It represented hope and the promise of a better future. He held it clasped to his breast as he recited more of the words of the Lectitio Divinitatis, feeling a familiar warmth suffuse him as he repeated the words. Titus sensed the presence of other people behind him a second too late, and turned to see Jonah Arukan and a group of the Titan's crew. Like him, they were dirty and tired after the fight against the monsters of this place, but unlike him, they did not have faith. Guiltily, he closed his chapbook and waited for Jonah's inevitable barb. No one said anything, and as he looked closer, he saw a brittle edge of sorrow and the need for comfort in the faces of the men before him. "Titus," said Jonah Urukin, "we—that is, the War Master. We wondered if—" Titus smiled in welcome, as he understood what they'd come for. He opened his chapbook again and said,
"Let us pray, brothers."
The medical deck was a sterile, gleaming wilderness of tiled walls and brushed steel cabinets, a warren of soulless glass rooms and laboratories. Petronella had completely lost all sense of direction, bewildered by the hasty summons that had brought her from the moon's surface back to the vengeful spirit. Passing through the bloody embarkation deck, she saw that the upper levels of the ship were in pandemonium, as word of the War Master's death had spread from vessel to vessel with all the fearsome rapidity of an epidemic. Malaghurst the Twisted had issued a fleet-wide communique, denying that the War Master was dead, but hysteria and paranoia had a firm head start on his words. Riots had taken hold aboard several ships, as doomsayers and demagogues had arisen, proclaiming that these were now the end times. Army units had been ruthlessly quashing such malcontents, but more sprang up faster than they could stop them. It had been scant hours since the War Master's fall, but the 63rd Expedition was already beginning to tear itself apart without him. Maggard followed Petronella, his wounds bound and sealed with sin skin by a Legion apothecary on the journey back to the War Master's flagship. His skin still had an unhealthy pallor, and his armor was dented and torn, but he was alive and magnificent. Maggard was only an indentured servant, but he had impressed her, and she resolved to treat him with the respect his talents deserved. A helmeted Astartes warrior led her through the confusing maze of the Medicaid deck, eventually indicating that she should enter a nondescript white door marked with a winged staff wrapped in a pair of twisting serpents. Maggard opened the door for her, and she entered a gleaming operating theatre, its circular walls covered to waist height in green enameled tiles. Silver cabinets and hissing, pumping machines surrounded the War Master, who lay on the operating slab with a tangled web of tubes and wires attached to his flesh. A stool of gleaming metal sat next to the slab. Medicaid servitors lurked around the circumference of the room, set into niches around the wall, and a gurgling machine suspended above the War Master fed fluid and blood into his body. Her eyes misted to see the War Master brought so low, and tears came at this violation of the natural order of things. A giant Astartes warrior in hooded surgical robes approached her and said, "My name is Apothecary Vadden, Miss Viva." She brushed her hands across her eyes, conscious of how she must look, her dress torn and caked with mud, her eyes blackened with smudged makeup. She started to hold her hand out for a kiss, but realized how foolish that would be, and simply nodded.
"I am Petronella Viva," she managed. "I am the War Master's documentarist."
"I know," said Vadden. "He asked for you by name." Sudden hope flared in her breast.
"He's awake."
Vadden nodded.
"He is."
"If it was up to me, you would not be here now. But I do not disobey the word of the commander, and he desires to speak with you."
"How is he?"
she asked. The apothecary shook his head. "He fades in and out of lucidity, so do not expect too much of him. If I decide it is time for you to leave, then you leave. Do you understand me?"
"I do," she said. "But please, may I speak with him now?"
Vadden seemed reluctant to let her near the War Master, but moved aside and let her pass. She nodded her thanks and took a faltering step towards the operating slab, eager to see the War Master, but afraid of what she might find. Petronella's hand leapt to her mouth to stifle an involuntary gasp at the sight of him. The War Master's cheeks were sunken and hollow, his eyes dull and listless. Grey flesh hung from his skull, wrinkled and ancient-looking, and his lips were the blue of a corpse.
"Do I look that bad?"
asked Horace, his voice rasping and distant.
"No,"
she stammered.
"Not at all. I—"
"Don't lie to me, Miss Viva. If you're to hear my valediction, then there must be no deceit between us."
"Valediction? No, I won't. You have to live."
"Believe me, There's nothing I'd like more.
He wheezed.
But Vadin tells me there's not much chance of that. And I don't intend to leave this life without a proper legacy. A record that says the things that must be said before the end.
Sir, your deeds alone stand as an eternal legacy. Please don't ask this of me.
Horus coughed a froth of blood onto his chest, gathering his strength before speaking once more, and his voice was the strong and powerful one she remembered. You told me that it was your vocation to immortalize me, to record the glory of Horus for future generations, did you not?
I did,
she sobbed. Then do this last thing for me, Miss Viva, he said. She swallowed hard and then fished out the data slate and Nemo quill from her reticule, before sitting on the high stool next to the operating slab.
Very well,
she said at last.
Let's start at the beginning.
It was too much, began Horus. I promised my father I would make no mistakes, and now we have come to this.
Mistakes?
Asked Petronella, though she suspected she knew the War Master's meaning.
Temba. Giving him lordship over Davin, said Horus. He begged me not to leave him behind, claimed it was too much for him. I should have listened, but I was too eager to be away on some fresh conquest.
Temba's weakness is not your fault, sir, she said.
It is good of you to say that, Miss Viva, but I appointed him, said Horus. The responsibility lies with me. Throne, Gilliman will laugh when he hears of this. Him and the lion both. They will say I was not fit to be War Master since I could not read the hearts of men.
Never,
cried Petronella.
They wouldn't dare.
Oh, they will, girl, believe me. We are brothers, yes, but like all brothers we squabble and seek to outdo one another.
Petronella could think of nothing to say. The idea of the superhuman Primarch squabbling quite beyond her.
They were jealous, all of them, continued Horus. When the Emperor named me War Master, it was all some of them could do to congratulate me. Angron especially. He was a wild one, and even now I can barely keep him in check. Gilliman wasn't much better. I could tell he thought it should have been him.
They were jealous of you?
Asked Petronella, unable to believe what the War Master was telling her. The Nemo quill scratching across the data slate in response to her thoughts.
Oh, yes, nodded Horus bitterly. Only a few of my brothers were gracious enough to bow their heads and mean it. Lorgar, Mortarion, Sanguinius, Fulgrim, and Dawn. They are true brothers. I remember watching the Emperor's Stormbird leaving Ulanor and weeping to see him go. But most of all, I remember the knives I felt in my back as he went. I could hear their thoughts as clearly as though they spoke them aloud. Why should I, Horus, be named War Master, when there were others more worthy of the honor?
You were made War Master because you were the most worthy, sir, said Petronella.
No, said Horus. I was not. I was simply the one who most embodied the Emperor's need at the time. You see, for the first 3 decades of the Great Crusade, I fought alongside the Emperor, and I alone felt the full weight of his ambition to rule the galaxy. He passed that vision to me, and I carried it with me in my heart as we forged our path across the stars. It was a grand adventure we were on. System after system reunited with the master of mankind. You cannot imagine what it was like to live in such times, Miss Viva.
It sounds magnificent.
It was, said Horus. It was. But it couldn't last. Soon we were being drawn to other worlds, where we discovered my brother Primarchs. We had been scattered throughout the galaxy not long after our birth, and one by one, the Emperor recovered us all.
It must have been strange to be reunited with brothers you had never known.
Not as strange as you might think. As soon as I met each one, I had an immediate kinship with him, a bond that not even time or distance had broken. I won't deny that some were harder to like than others. If you ever meet Nighthaunter, you'll understand what I mean. Moody bastard. But handy in a tight spot when you need some alien empire shitting in its britches before you attack. Angron's not much better, mind. He's got a temper on him like you've never seen. You think you know anger. I tell you now that you don't know anything until you've seen Angron lose his temper. And don't get me started on the lion.
Of the Dark Angels? His is the First Legion, is it not?
It is, replied Horus. And doesn't he just love to remind everyone of that? I could see in his eyes that he thought he should have been War Master, because his legion was the first. Did you know he'd grown up living like an animal in the wilds? Little better than a feral savage? I ask you, is that the sort of man you want as your War Master? No, it is not, said Horus, answering his own question.
Then who would you have picked to be War Master, if not you? Asked Petronella.
Horus appeared to be momentarily perturbed by her question, but said,
Sanguinius. It should have been him. He has the vision and strength to carry us to victory, and the wisdom to rule once that victory is won. For all his aloof coolness, he alone has the Emperor's soul in his blood. Each of us carries part of our father within us, whether it is his hunger for battle, his psychic talent, or his determination to succeed. Sanguinius holds it all. It should have been his.
And what part of the Emperor do you carry, sir?
Me. I carry his ambition to rule. While the conquest of the galaxy lay before us, that was enough. But now, we are nearing the end. There is a Cretan proverb that says that peace is always over there. But that is no longer true. It is within our grasp. The job is almost done. And what is left for a man of ambition when the work is over?
You are the Emperor's right hand, sir, protested Petronella. His favored son.
No more, said Horus sadly. Petty functionaries and administrators have supplanted me. The War Council is no more, and I receive my orders from the Council of Terror now. Once, everything in the Imperium was geared for war and conquest. But now, we are burdened with exactors, scribes and scriveners who demand to know the cost of everything. The Imperium is changing, and I'm not sure I know how to change with it.
In what way is the Imperium changing?
Bureaucracy and officialdom are taking over, Miss Viva. Red tape. Administrators and clerks are replacing the heroes of the age. And unless we change our ways and our direction, our greatness as an empire will soon be a footnote in the history books. Everything I have achieved will be a distant memory of former glory, lost in the mists of time, like the civilizations of ancient Terra, remembered kindly for their noble past.
But surely the Crusade was but the first step towards creating a new Imperium for mankind to rule the galaxy. In such a galaxy we will need administrators, laws, and scribes.
And what of the warriors who conquered it for you? Snarled Horus. What becomes of us? Are we to become jailers and peacekeepers? We were bred for war, and we were bred to kill. That is what we were created for. But we have become so much more than that. I am more than that.
Progress is hard, my lord, and people must always adapt to changing times, said Petronella,
uneasy at this change of temper in the War Master. It is not strange to mistake change for progress, Miss Viva, said Horus.
I was bred with wondrous powers encoded into my very flesh, but I did not dream myself into the man I am today.
I hammered and forged myself upon the anvil of battle and conquest. All that I have achieved in the last 2 centuries will be given away to weak men and women who are not here to shed their blood with us in the dark places of the galaxy. Where is the justice in that? Lesser men will rule what I have conquered. But what will be my reward once the fighting is done?
Petronella glanced away at Apothecary Vadon, but he simply watched impassively as she took down Horace's words. She wondered briefly if he was as upset as she was at the War Master's anger. As shocked as she was, her ambitious core realized that she had the makings of the most sensational remembrance imaginable, one that would dispel forever the myth of the Crusade as a united band of brothers forging their destiny among the stars. Horace's words painted a picture of mistrust and disunion that no one had ever dreamed of. Seeing her expression, Horace reached up with a shaking hand and touched her arm.
I am sorry, Miss Viva. My thoughts are not as clear as they ought to be.
No, she said. I think they're clearer than ever now.
I can tell I'm shocking you. I'm sorry if I have shattered your illusions.
I admit I am surprised by much of what you're saying, sir.
But you like it, yes. It's what you came here for.
She tried to deny it, but the sight of the dying Primarch gave her pause, and she nodded.
Yes, she said. It's what I came here for. Will you tell me everything?
He looked up and met her stare.
Yes,
he said.
I will.